Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our fall membership drive. I'll get back to that in just a moment. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Connie Schultz has devoted her journalism career to telling the stories of America's working class. In her new novel, The Daughters of Erietown, Schultz tells a story that spans generations and reflects the gender inequality, class struggles, and racism through the prism of one Midwest family, much like her own growing up. And Connie Schultz joins us today. Welcome to the show, Connie.
Thank you, Ann. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. The novel is about multiple generations of women growing up and living in a place called Erietown, but it's also about the town itself. It's sort of like the other character, which you patterned after your own hometown of Ashtabula.
That's right. My editor had great advice, Kate Medina at Random House. She said, you can make it as much like Ashtabula as you want, but give it a different name so everyone isn't telling you what you got wrong. So that's what I did.
Because it's fiction and you can do that.
That's exactly right. How did you,
which is the other benefit, how did you come to call it Erietown?
That name has been in my head for many years now. And certainly it's an ode to the lake. I grew up on Lake Erie. And I can't imagine being in a landlocked area only because I've always known my life to be on the lake. I don't live right on the shore of it, but I've spent so many years there, especially as a kid. So that part that was probably the easiest part of the novel, is figuring out the name of the town.
And then therefore the name of the book. But the name of the book, did you know that as well early on? I can't remember. Well, we've talked about this, but I can't remember.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate that question because you know how this works. We writers can get very attached to things.
Uh-huh.
And I was very attached to calling it Erietown. That was the working title for me. I have a sign in my home office that my friend Sue Klein had made for me that's framed. It looks like an old town sign. And it says Erietown, established 1957, which is the year I was born. Random House felt pretty strongly that we needed to have some sense of people in the title because it was my first novel in particular. So that's how we ended up with The Daughters of Erietown. It was not my idea. I rejected a lot of them, but as soon as they came up with that one, I thought, well, that could work because at the heart of this book is a story of women's lives.
Exactly. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our fall membership drive. And remember, listener support, it's the most important part of our budget. So please make your gift right now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678 for a membership of $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180, you can get a very special offer. Get a ticket to a WOSU Public Media exclusive member event. It's a virtual conversation with me and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author Connie Schultz. You'll join us for a casual, candid conversation. This virtual event will be held via Zoom on Thursday, October 15th at 6:30 p.m. Plus, for your gift, you will get an autographed copy of Connie's book, Daughters of Erietown. This event is exclusive for members who donate today at WOSU.org or call and make a gift at 866-897-9678. Connie and I will talk about the state of our country in this election year and her long career as a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. Make a gift of $15 a month to secure your spot in this virtual event with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And that gift supports 89.7 NPR News. So think about how much you have relied on this station, especially in recent months. You listen to NPR maybe at different times, but you listen to NPR to hear facts that you can trust when you want to know what's going on with mail-in voting. This is the station you turn to for information you can rely on. We even have a complete detailed voter's guide at WOSU.org. Your support makes all of that possible. So give today at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And for $15 a month, you can get an autographed copy of Connie's new book, The Daughters of Erietown, and attend our exclusive members-only virtual event. Give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And Connie Schultz, thanks again for sharing your time during our membership drive. I really appreciate it.
Well, and I'm going to say what you would never say. WSU is, you alone make it worth this contribution. And I hope everybody who's listening and those who check out later what we are talking about here will support public radio in Columbus. I have been a fan of yours for so many years, and I don't use that word lightly. I love the work you do and the reporting you've done. You do so much research for your interviews. And I know the Columbus community is aware of how lucky they are, but I get to say it on the air, and here I am.
Thank you, Connie. I really appreciate
that. And you can't stop me.
My sister texted me and said, I have to admit, I'm super jelly. You get to talk to Connie Schultz today. And I'm lucky enough to have talked to you several times, and I always appreciate it. So thank you so much. I'm gratified and appreciate your compliments. So everybody out there, Connie Schultz is with me, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, nationally syndicated columnist. Her first novel is titled The Daughters of Erietown. We're talking about that and much more this hour. Yeah, as you said, women anchor the story, especially Ellie McGinty. And we meet her as a young child when she's been abandoned by her parents, basically, and raised by her paternal grandparents. And, as you said, the story revolves around the women. And can you talk about the role older female relatives have played in your upbringing?
Well, my mom, there are some similarities between Ellie McGinty and my mom, who's been gone now for 21 years, and she was raised by her paternal grandparents. And so my closest grandparent was my great-grandmother, who raised my mom. And my mom was not much for cooking or learning how to, embroider and do and make quilts and stuff. I learned all of that from my great-grandmother, and I would never want to diminish the importance of that in my life. In fact, here I am in COVID time. I'm now needlepointing pillows in my living room. And I said to Sharon, I am so glad I know how to do this. And I feel like I'm returning to my former self, because it's been so many years since I even made time for that. And the creativity during this time can be so helpful, I am finding. But I also, to some extent, it's the woman I never knew, which was my paternal grandmother. She died when I was 2.5. I found out years later, after my father gave me a scrapbook that she had kept, that she had wanted to be a writer. And she had done, she'd had these little things published in the local paper in rural Ohio. She would do the PTA minutes. She belonged to this little literary society, but her byline almost always was Mrs. Harry Schultz. Mm-hmm. And I have a framed picture of her sitting by herself in a chair outside reading a book. And as I was working on this, I kept thinking, and this is for you, because in this book, this author will have her own name.
Right. Your own name, Schultz.
And Connie.
And Connie, of
misses
course.
Anybody,
yes.
Right?
Exactly.
It sounds so, it sounds so basic, but it wasn't back then.
Right.
Back then, I've had many women influence my life, and not just the women in my own family. I'm sure this is true of you as well. The reason I talk so often about carrying as we climb is because of the many women who helped my career. There certainly were a few men, but overwhelmingly, it was women who created the opportunities and the openings for me. And at this age now, I'm in my 60s, I'm so mindful that I don't feel like we need to step aside, my generation of women, but we certainly need to be making room for the next generation coming. And in that way, I feel like I can fulfill a promise I made to myself when so many other women were helping me.
On the shoulders of giants, right?
Yes. And often anonymous to most of the world, but forever remembered by me.
I wanted to talk to you about what's going on out there.
Which part would you like to wade into? Let me know.
It is your husband, Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, you referred to him a moment ago, was tapped to be up front for Joe Biden, talking to the media about the Bob Woodward book. And, there's a whole nother part of your life that is anything but needlepointing pillows at home. It's really wonderful to be able to talk to you and like a normal person, but you're anything but a normal person. You're married to somebody who's a member of the quote unquote most exclusive club in the world.
If he ever refers to it as a club or thinks he's entitled to it, I don't imagine I'd be married to him much longer. So
exactly.
I'm glad that he doesn't think of it that way ever.
But But it's a view of the world that few of us ever have. I'm just wondering what it's like to be straddling all of these worlds that you straddle.
Yeah. Well, you're right. I mean, it's always been more than one thing here, right? I write my nationally syndicated column, and I'm teaching at Kent State in the journalism school at my alma mater, and I'm married to a United States senator. And this is during this time of COVID, we've spent more time together uninterrupted than we have for all of our 16 years of marriage. The good news is we still like each other very much. So yeah. <yes.
married. laughs>
But the thing that's been really weighing for both of us, and it should be, I want to make it clear, there is no COVID. My editor, Kate Medina, years ago gave me the motto for our life: no whining on the yacht. Look what we get to do. But he tends to be on speakerphone for a lot of these conference calls. And these, of course, he does a lot of these Zoom meetings. And he is talking to so many people who are trying to help the most disadvantaged in our country, who were at such disadvantage before COVID hit. And he's also having a lot of conversations with people who are in the thick of it, trying to solve the biggest problems for our communities right now. And these are really heavy conversations often. I sometimes walk out of the room for a minute to collect myself if I happen to be listening in on something. And I don't mean that in any kind of way except this: there is so much out there going on right now. And I'm proud of Sharon for how much he's trying to help. But I also understand better than I ever have before the weight of that job for any senator who cares about the people he's serving and who cares about the country, because we've never seen a time like this.
Right.
So we take a lot of long walks with the dogs. We tend to talk about this and all this, of course, when we're walking, but it still helps to walk and talk, you know, as you know. And it's given me a very different perspective. I would say it has enriched my perspective on what his life is like right in that job, and why it matters so much that we find outlets to let off steam. We think it's really important to still be able to laugh. Our grandchildren provide us, unfortunately, at a distance for the most part right now, a lot of levity and joy in our lives. But we're very mindful of how lucky we are. David Axelrod said something to me a while ago. He said, those who were lucky before COVID or when it first started are lucky now. And that has really stayed with me, because those of us who don't have to be out waiting on the public every day, who are not out there trying to save lives in medical facilities, you know, in the hospitals and in the clinics. So many people are having to put themselves at risk every day. And we are both lucky in that we haven't had to do that.
That is Connie Schultz, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, nationally syndicated columnist, and author of her first novel now, The Daughters of Erie Town. I don't want to stop talking with Connie, but I have to, because I want to talk to you, listeners. It is our fall membership drive, and for this hour of All Sides, our guest is writer and journalist Connie Schultz. And anyone who follows Connie on social media knows she has a lot to say about the state of our country right now. Plus, she has a new novel out, as I said, The Daughters of Erie Town. And this hour of All Sides is extra special because of the thank you gift package we're offering when you support us today at WOSU.org. Or call 866-897-9678. We are thrilled to have Connie join us for an exclusive member event. Make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer, or a one-time gift of $180, and attend a virtual event brought to you by WOSU Public Media. Join us for a casual, candid conversation between me and Connie Schultz. Plus, you'll also get an autographed copy of Connie's new book, The Daughters of Erie Town. Join us for this event for $15 a month at WOSU.org, or call 866-897-9678. During this event, we'll talk politics and talk about Connie's career as a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. The event will be informative, engaging, and we'll take questions from WOSU members. This virtual event is scheduled for Thursday, October 15th at 6:30 p.m. Don't miss it. It'll be fun, interactive, and available just for WOSU members who give during our fall membership drive. That's $15 a month as a sustaining member, or a one-time gift of $180. So give now at WOSU.org, or call 866-897-9678. And thanks to Hannah Litz of Pataskala and also Stacy Evans of Grahamville for your support of 89.7. Giving Right Now supports this show and everything you hear on 89.7 NPR News. This station and this talk show has been covering it all. COVID-19, race and social justice issues, politics, both locally and nationally. If this station is your source for news and information, then now is the time to show your support. Give right now at WOSU.org. Call 866-897-9678. If you want to attend our special event with Connie Schultz, give now and secure your spot. Make that gift of $15 a month at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Once you make that gift to attend our event, you'll get an email with a special link that will take you right to the event. We hope you can join us. Make a gift right now for $15 a month or a one-time gift of $180 at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. A lot of us are talking these days about having the hard conversations about race and racism in our country. And you wrote about your dad's own racism in a piece for The Atlantic a few years ago, and you said that you were tired of the stereotype that white working class also implied racism. Can you talk about having these hard conversations and what it means to you?
Well, thanks for asking that. Yeah, as I say repeatedly these days, our roots are our beginnings. They're not our excuses. And I'm never, as you know from my novel, I don't romanticize the working class, especially white working class people. But I also know that we're more nuanced than that as a population of people. First of all, we're not all white if we're talking about working class. We're mm-hmm. so many. In the Atlantic ran, I believe at least one, maybe two of my classroom pictures from those years. Half my class all the way through elementary school was Black. And so early on, I knew that your friends don't have to look like you to be like you. And that really informed the trajectory of not just my career, but of my life. And I wanted to write that column because, that essay for The Atlantic, because mm-hmm. I was hearing and reading such lazy reporting that wanted to just categorize an entire group of people as racist. And I thought, well, first of all, that's letting people off the hook. We have the hard work to do of ourselves, no matter how we're raised. We reach a point in our lives where we have to decide who we're going to be and what we're going to be. And I also wanted to recognize that many of us, always stumbling, always in need of improvement, have tried to reach beyond our roots. Particularly, it was hard to be a little kid. Every girl, little girl, wants to look up to her dad and see him as her hero and as perfect. And my dad had certainly some wonderful traits. I mean, he's the reason I went to college, the first of my family to go. But he also really had a problem with race. And very early, I mean, when you're 6-7 years old and you already know that your dad doesn't know what he's talking about, it affects your view of him. I fully acknowledge that. But it was the thing that separated us in various periods of time throughout his life. And it would be, especially once I had children and I didn't want him talking that way in front of my kids.
Yeah.
And I wrote about it because I wanted us to be willing to have these conversations with our own families in the working class. I wanted us to be willing to challenge and speak out against this, because that is, to me, it is crucial if we are ever going to round the corner on this.
Yeah, I had, I've done countless shows on the whole topic of everything from police brutality to social justice issues. And a couple times now I've been left with the suggestion from a Black American who's participated in the conversations that whites need to be having these conversations with each other. We can't moderate all of these.
Well, and it's not our Black friends and Black family members, and in our case, also in our family, Latino members, it's not their job to keep educating us and to help us grow. It's our job to take responsibility for that. I feel this so strongly, and we live in the city of Cleveland. We live in zip code 44105. We are the minority race in our community. And it is so important that we not be distinguishing between Black community and white community, mm-hmm. Latino community, Asian American community. This is our community. These are our children being killed. These are our fellow Americans being brutalized. And if we keep trying to make it silos of community, silos of interest, mm-hmm. we never fully own the problem as ours to solve.
Exactly. Your thoughts about growing up working class meant that you never thought anything would go easy and how that informed your work. And I'm wondering about your reaction to the news last year that super wealthy people were cheating to get their kids into the best schools and the sense of betrayal. I think when I felt a real pang, I mean, I was disgusted by the news, but I also felt a pang for those kids who didn't know.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that children are innocent. Period. They should not be held responsible for their parents' misdeeds. And I've always felt that way. I think we've been willing to talk about it more because these were white kids who were essentially victimized by their parents because of what their parents tried to do. We don't hold as much sympathy, but I remember when Tamir Rice was shot and killed, 12 years old, shot by Cleveland police here. One of the first stories we saw in local media here were the criminal backgrounds of his parents.
Yeah.
Which had nothing to do with his being shot. So that's why I'm drawing the contrast there. But also that whole scandal, look, I teach at Kent State for a reason. When they came to me and asked if I'd be interested in teaching, I wanted to go back to my alma mater because first of all, I was the first in my family to go to college. A third of my students are coming from the working class. They're the first. Virtually all of my students have to hold down jobs while they're in school. Some of them more than one, many of them more than one. They are working so hard. They are just as gifted, just as smart. And one of the things I want them to understand is I'm them. I came from that. And that there's an advantage to having worked so hard all the time. We don't expect anything to come easy. I think as journalists, they have an ease with talking to anyone and paying attention to the rest of America. I remember shortly after the election in 2016, and I was asked to speak at an editors conference from editors from around the country, newspaper editors, at a panel in Washington, and they asked, why did we miss this dynamic of Trump support? And I said really bluntly, if you had hired more of the students who I've been teaching and my colleagues have been teaching, the ones who graduate from Kent State, you wouldn't have missed all this because they have relatives who are voting for Trump. They're living in areas where they saw a lot of Trump signs. Mm-hmm. They would have known to be asking those people because it was part of their communities. And so, as you can see, I have a friend who once accused me of being a reverse snob.
Yeah, but I tell that story. Yeah, tell that. That's great.
I readily own it. Readily own it. Yes, I think we bring something special with the work we do.
Yeah, I mean, that's just reading about that. But you said that, yeah, but it's not, you know, the reverse snobbery, it isn't a two-way street because people... You know, the working class in this country, if we want to call it that, they're suffering
they sure are.
Through all these changes. Yes. And pre-COVID, for sure, it's above and beyond COVID.
Right. Working class people and people living in poverty, they have always struggled more. But the thing is, Anne, when I went to college, it was affordable at a state school.
Yeah, right. Oh, gosh, I look back at the bills and I just want to die. They're so cheap.
Right. The federal aid was available. The grants were available. Loans were very low interest, student loans.
It's like free money.
And my dad's union job also made it easier for us to figure out how I was going to go to college. There was so much in place that isn't there anymore.
Yep.
It's so much harder to be a working class person now who aspires to do something bigger with his or her life.
Thanks to Melinda Stoltz of Columbus and also Megan Taylor of Columbus. Thanks for your support because you know that this is listener supported. 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Support the station you listen to every day at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Boy, 2020 has been an interesting year, to say the least. Many of us have been adapting to a new normal. All of us have, I think. And All Sides has been covering it all, from the pandemic to social justice and race issues to the 2020 election. Make a gift today in support of 89.7 NPR News and this show as well. And when you make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer, we have a great idea for you. You get to attend an exclusive event. Connie Schultz will join me Thursday evening, October 15th at 6:30 for casual, candid conversation about her career, her new book, and the state of the country in this significant election year. Connie has spent her career writing about working class men and women. And that is the backdrop for her new book. When you make a gift today to attend our special event, you'll also get an autographed copy of Connie's book, The Daughters of Erietown. Give now at $15 a month at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And thanks to Beth Hume of Columbus for your support. Remember, not only do you get to attend this great event, but you'll also be supporting public radio with your gift. We're listener-supported 89.7 NPR News. We don't say that lightly. We count on listeners, just like you, to give what you can during these membership drives. In return, we bring you news and information that you can trust every day. So if you have been a sustaining member at, say, $10 a month for a while, we say thank you for your ongoing support. But right now we're asking you to consider increasing that sustaining gift to $15 a month. Those extra dollars will go a long way in helping us continue to provide you with this important news and information. And with your increased gift, you can get our thank you package today, a ticket to our exclusive virtual event on October 15th, and an autographed copy of Connie Schultz's new book. And again, that is $15 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $180 at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And wow, thank you to Lonnie Thompson from Columbus. Thank you so much, Lonnie, for showing your support for 89.7 NPR News. Again, WOSU.org. It's very quick. Or you can call, and it's just as quick, 866-897-9678. 897-9678. Connie, thanks again for joining us. You know, in your new novel, you celebrate Ohio from its dedicated workforce to its most exalted citizens, John and Annie Glenn, personal friends of yours. And why was it important to you to single out Annie Glenn's achievements? I consider my trip with them one day when I traveled around the state with them in a campaign round, you know, in his little Cessna, to be one of high points of my career, just to hang out with John and Annie Glenn, you know. And I was thrilled when I read about her in your story.
Oh, thanks for asking about this. And Annie was not in the first draft. Annie and John, of course, were very dear friends of ours. I miss them so much. And I turned in the book, and my editor said to me that it would be helpful in the timeline of the book to include a few more historical references. And she said, don't force any of it. Well, as serendipity would have it, at the same time, a friend of mine, Ann Hansen from Montana, mailed two copies of Life magazine from the 60s, from that year that John circled the earth in 63. And it was one of the cover stories was Annie's version of what happened when he was up in space. And I knew the backstory of that because she and I had talked about it before, about how hard it was to be an astronaut's wife. At that time, Annie had not conquered her stuttering yet. She had not gone for the special training. And she was very nervous about dealing with the press. And yet here she was, scared to death as her husband was up there with a photographer and a reporter with her the entire time from Life magazine. And it occurred to me that my main female character, Ellie McGinty, would have those copies saved on her coffee table because they were from Ohio. My parents revered the Glens. And in my view, it's always been true that Annie was a hero in her own right for so many reasons. And so I decided to insert that moment and have Ellie talk about how nobody talks about how brave Annie is. And Annie was quite ill when I decided to include that. I did write her a letter, several pages as I recall, because I knew they were still reading mail to her, and told her about the scene in the book and just wanted her to know that I love her always. And I wanted her to know that I have, in my own very small way, paid tribute to her.
What a great story. They're both past now, but their memories, you know, and the memories of what they did, they live on in places like that, like your book.
Well, they certainly live on in my heart. Annie, in particular, was so supportive of me when I first, I had been married to Sherrod for a year and a half when he decided to run for the Senate. And it was all so overwhelming for me. And I said to her very early on, I don't even know how to be a politician's wife. And she said, you just be who you are. And that is going to be enough. That'll be everything. And to hear it from Annie, who is so different in personality from me publicly, privately, she's very funny and had her own asides that always made me laugh. But she was more diplomatic publicly than I've ever been. But she gave me permission to just be who I am.
I remember the first time I met her when I went on that, traveled with them that day, she said, and I had worn a brand new pair of shoes, you know. And she said, "Oh, those are just lovely shoes, and I hope you don't wreck them today." You know, it's just, yeah, she's a great person. Thanks to Karen Paneth of Columbus and also Kathy and Dave Levy of Hilliard for your show of support for 89.7 NPR News. You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and maybe you listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher all the time. If you do, then you know that we work hard to bring you a diverse range of topics. That's the number one comment I get from listeners repeatedly. From news of the day to long-term trends, you know you're going to hear about it all on this show. And our goal over time is to bring you all sides of the issues that matter to you. This is something that only happens on public radio. To support local programming that is truly local, go online to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And remember, no matter what amount you give, you're supporting the news and information on 89.7 NPR News. You need to feel very good about whatever you do to show support. There is power behind your gift to the station. Your gift is combined with thousands of other gifts, and all those gifts together make a very powerful voice. We are listener-supported public radio. You are the power behind public radio. Give now. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. That transition from, well, you're still a journalist, you're still a columnist, a syndicated columnist, you're super famous, but in your own right, but probably more so than even your husband, frankly.
I would never make that claim.
I don't know if my sister could remember Sherrod Brown's name, but I know she knew who you were on your own volition. But, you know, growing up, I was a public affairs and political journalist for much of my career. And the idea of, marrying a politician would be really weird.
Yeah, that's one word for it. Yes, I remember when I had never covered Sherrod, or I would never have agreed to go out with him. He hates when I say that, but it's true. I wouldn't have. It would have been unthinkable. But I do remember having to tell the editor of our paper at the time, because my editor said, "You better go tell him that you're dating Sherrod." So I went in and said I wanted you to know. And Sherrod was in the House at that time, the House of Representatives. And the editor said, "Sherrod Brown, the congressman?" And I so wanted to say, no, Sherrod Brown, the trapeze artist. It's all good. It's not at all the same guy. Because it was quite stunning. And everybody was very unhappy with me for a bit there in the paper. But, we fell in love. And we met. Our first date after several months of emailing was January 1st of 2003. And we were married by April 10th, my late mother's birthday, the following year. After years of being single parents, both of us. I mean, neither of us would have ever predicted this. It was so funny after, because we would meet so many people who knew one or the other of us well, would say, "Why didn't I think of this? Why didn't we think to introduce you? This is perfect." But we met when we were supposed to.
Thank you to Janet Brand of Pataskala and also Vicki Knoll of Westerville. Thanks for your support of 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Connie Schultz, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, nationally syndicated columnist and author. We've been talking about her first novel, The Daughters of Erie Town. I wanted to talk about Bob Woodward's decision to withhold the audio from his February interview with the president, in which the president admits that the COVID-19 virus is very deadly, unlike his public comments saying that it would, among other things, just disappear. What do you talk about with your journalism students when you're getting into the ethics of that?
Well, a half hour before I came on the show with you, I had sent a series of links about it to both my students in my ethics class and in opinion writing. And this is what we're going to be discussing tomorrow because it does raise an ethical issue. We have these traditional definitions of journalism, which I hold dear, and I know you do. But we are in different times, and I'm wondering if these different times mandated or required that Woodward put country ahead of book publishing. Because while he claims now that he thought that Trump was talking about China, in February, and then nobody cared. Certainly by April, he understood that Trump was not talking about just China, because Donald Trump still wasn't changing what he was saying about the virus. And we are nearing 200,000 deaths now in this country. That number is still going to climb through Election Day.
Absolutely.
And it is a conversation to be had, I think, because he saved it for the book. There's no question that he saved it for the book. And I'm going to be really curious to hear what my students have to say about it. As you know, NBR had a two-part interview with her that I've included in it. And Margaret Sullivan of the Washington Post, his former employer, raised the issue as well. The Today Show, he's been on. Many journalists have weighed in on this point. And I look forward to the conversation with my students because, you know, these young journalists are really smart about values and bias. We talk a lot about that objectivity is a myth. The goal is fairness. We must be fair. And to be fair, we must know our own biases and we have to know our values so we know what lines we will not cross, even if an employer asks that we do so. So I think it's a fair question to ask, and I welcome the spirited discussion across the country.
So it's the publisher that requested it?
No, it doesn't. Well, it doesn't really matter who requested
right.
it. Bob Woodward made the decision
yeah.
to not reveal it until the book was, until we were on the brink of the book being published. This rests with Bob Woodward.
You know, I mean, you and I were both in high school when all the presidents met. Well, you know, when the Nixon conspiracy.
It's why I got into journalism. Wasn't it for you? Watergate.
It wasn't what got me. I wanted to be a journalist since I was a third grade. I was a weirdo. But,
oh, wow.
But it definitely propelled me further into it and underscored for me. It was so huge. And now to come here, you know, how many decades later, 40 or 50, something like that, later and have Woodward making these kinds of decisions, it does feel bizarre.
We're in different times. We've never had a president like this. I make no secret that I think Donald Trump is the most dangerous president in U.S. history, in my view. And so does that require something more from us or different from us as journalists? I mean, it's easy for me to weigh in. I'm a newspaper columnist, right? I'm paid to give my opinions. I've interviewed Bob Woodward on stage before for a program, and I've talked to him at events before. I have always had a lot of respect for his journalism. I would say this, I have not been satisfied with his answers so far on this.
Thanks to Marianne Kafer of Columbus and also Anne Greth Nill of Columbus for your show of support for 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Connie Schultz today, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, nationally syndicated columnist and author. Her first novel is The Daughters of Erie Town, a beautiful story about multiple generations growing up in a working class town in Ohio. Your support pays for the programs you listen to every day, programs like All Sides and All Things Considered and Marketplace. These programs are paid for with listener support, and in return for your membership, we're offering you a great gift. You can get a ticket to an exclusive WOSU member event. We're calling it In Conversation, Ann Fisher and Connie Schultz. It should be Connie Schultz and maybe Ann Fisher. And this event will be a casual, candid conversation. We will be taking questions from the audience, too. And that audience will be WOSU members only, because you can only access this event by making a gift during our fall membership drive. The event is Thursday, October 15th at 6:30 p.m. We'll also include an autographed copy of Connie's new book. We hope you'll attend this event. Make a gift of $15 a month as a sustainer. That sustaining gift can be withdrawn from your checking account or charged to your credit card. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We have 15 minutes left in the hour, and to make this hour a success, let's try to get 15 more pledges at any level, just to make this hour a great success and is enjoyable. You know, it's been wonderful talking with Connie. I always love it. Let's also make it a successful hour for 89.7 NPR News. With your gift, not only do you get to attend a great event, but you'll also be a member of 89.7 NPR News. And as a regular listener to All Sides with Ann Fisher, you know that we bring you a diverse range of topics, from news of the day to long-term trends. We are bringing you important information about COVID-19 so that you can make informed decisions for yourself, your family, and our community. We're covering race issues, social justice, policing, and we're covering the election at a local and national level. All Sides with Ann Fisher is dedicated to in-depth, thoughtful discussions that go beyond the headlines. Support your public radio station today. Visit WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And here's the great thing. If you're already a member of 89.7 NPR News, thank you. But if you've been a member at $10 a month for a while, this is a great opportunity to increase that sustaining membership by $5 a month to $15 a month. Your added support will go a long way toward keeping this station strong. And then you can also get the thank you gift to attend our virtual event on October 15th. So consider increasing your sustaining membership to $15 a month today at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And thank you, Doug and Joni Calum of Columbus, for your show of support. We really appreciate it. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Connie Schultz, how do you assess the media's coverage of the Trump presidency?
Well, there's media coverage from 2015 and 16, which we've been stuck with ever since. Mm-hmm. I wish, for example, we hadn't echoed his fake news the way we did in the beginning, because that gave it a lot of traction. I'll never forget being asked to be on MSNBC with Steve Kornacki when they were in Cleveland. And we sat there and sat there for an entire hour while they aired his entire campaign speech live in the middle of the day. And that's when I thought, we're in trouble here, because at that point, it was going unchecked. All the lies that he was spewing in every speech, it was not being checked with the rigor that it is now. Media coverage is different in some ways now. I understand people get frustrated and say, why do you have to cover him at all? You do not, I think, want to, if you think this through, we don't want to live in America where the journalists are not doing everything we can to hold the government accountable. And that would include the president. I was just talking to my students yesterday about the truth sandwich that George Lakoff, the linguist, talked about. You don't start with the lie, because the lie gets repeated, and that's what too many people believe. You start with the fact check. For example, just saying that Donald Trump, if we can go about the COVID, in February lied when he said that that it was not very serious, it would go away quickly. He knew ahead of time. He was aware early of how dangerous this was, but then he lied to the American public. And the truth sandwich is there. The truth, the lie, the truth. You bracket it in that way. I think we're getting better at it, but we have a lot of improving to do. I'm sorry if anyone thinks it's a partisan issue to discuss it with Donald Trump, but this is a known quantity, a known fact about him. He regularly lies to the American people, and it is journalists' job to fact check.
Thanks to Jan Capaldi of Columbus and also Ava James of Columbus. That means we have 12 pledges to go before the end of the hour. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Again, help us make this a really successful hour and do it while Connie Schultz is on the air with me. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. You know, I couldn't help thinking that Brick, the proud union worker and Democrat in the Daughters of Erie Town, would probably be a Trump voter in 2020.
I will answer. I've been asked that before. Mm-hmm. But here's what I think. Like my father, had my father been alive, he loved his daughters more than his racism. And I would say that was true of Brick. Brick certainly was evolving more than my father ever did. And as you remember, Sam is dating somebody towards, and it is challenging to him, but he loves her more. And I think that would have made him not vote for Trump, because certainly Sam would not have. But we know plenty of Bricks who do. But here's the other thing about Trump voters. In 2018, I sat in on some focus groups throughout the year when Sherrod was running for re-election, focus groups with Trump voters. And while it's true that the men were pretty much lost to the Democrats, they were not going to, even if they had voted for Democrats before, they were going to vote for Trump. They were glad they did. The women started to peel off, and they were peeling off over two issues, separation at the border, family separations, where children were quite literally being ripped out of the arms of their parents and separated from them. and migrant families, such as the brown children from their parents, and healthcare. Now, if healthcare was an issue for female Trump voters in 2018, before COVID, one can only imagine how much more severely that divide is growing with women in 2020.
You know, going back to, you know, talking with your journalism students, I think it's an interesting way to talk about journalism and the Trump administration. And it feels like, you know, armed battle right now between the media and Donald Trump and his people. It's a hard place to be when you're someone like me and you, you know, too, who were raised in that. You know, I don't vote in primaries, you know, that kind of a thing. I don't, you know, I'm not partisan. As a journalist, it's part of my ethic. And I'm just wondering how you feel about this, how journalists are forced to both cover him and take his abuse.
Well, I've had a lot of concern about it from the very beginning. The day after the election in 2016, it was only my second semester at Kent. I decided to go in the next day. I had classes. One had been canceled because my students, so many of them were going to be covering the election. I figured they'd be exhausted. Nobody around there thought, most of the country didn't think Trump was going to win. It's been repeatedly reported that Trump didn't think he was going to win. Mm-hmm. It was triage that day. I had a line outside my office going down the hall. Many of them were students who didn't have me for class, but they knew who I was. They knew what I cared about. And the thing is, what they kept talking about, most of them, I had a few DACA students, which was really hard. They were scared to death. Was that he hates us. He has demonized us. He has called us the enemy of the people. And now he's going to be president. And of course, I had an initial concern that they might peel off the program. I mean, they may not even want to be journalists. But you know what? They did pretty much what we did with Watergate. They rallied and saw it as any president of the United States who wants to treat us as enemies of the state. Is exactly the person we need to be covering and bringing the full scope of scrutiny to. And I'm really proud of them. But it is, you know, I remember in the fall of 2016, every class, who's covering the Trump rally in here? Who's wherever the president was going to be, Pennsylvania or Ohio? And if any of them were, I stopped everything and gave them some, you know, remind them of the guidelines on how to stay safe. Because there was concern at that point already that they could be attacked because he has an ability to work up rallies into a mob mentality and literally focus them on the press, ask them to turn and taunt the reporters and the photographers who were there and the cameramen and camera women. And I needed to keep my students safe. I felt we had a real responsibility. If you had ever told me that would be what I'd be teaching before Donald Trump existed as a candidate, it never even occurred to me that we would be worried about that.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. He didn't invent this attitude about the press. I mean, the first time I ever experienced it was covering Dan Quayle when George H.W. was Bush was running for office, and Dan Quayle turned the crowd on the media as we stood in the, you know, the raised area where the media was forced to stand, and they started booing us. But yeah, it's been brought to a whole new art form.
I mean, Dan Quayle didn't stand there and say, look how disgusting they are. Look at the filth up on. I mean, he's a name caller and he's doing it to the media and he's encouraging them to taunt them and threaten them.
Yeah, it was a weird feeling and it made you feel, I don't know. I can still remember it. Thanks to Elizabeth Finnerty of Worthington, we have 11 to go and just about 6 minutes to go in the hour. And we need your help. We need you to tell us that 89.7 NPR News is important to you, that you recognize our dedication to bringing you in-depth local news, you know, that we have our award-winning news team. We have this show, a two-hour local talk show. It's pretty rare. This program is only possible with listener support. You hear in-depth features on the issues that impact life in Central Ohio from our news department. You hear conversations on the topics that matter to you when you listen to All Sides. We bring you interviews with newsmakers across the country and in your own backyard. Please support the programming that keeps you connected. Go online to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Thanks to Bill Rabinowitz of Columbus That number is 866-897-9678. Thanks, Bill, for your support of 89.7 NPR News. Maybe you're a fan of Bill's. He's a great sports reporter for the Columbus Dispatch and author himself. If Bill's doing it, maybe you'll do it too. 866-897-9678. Thanks to Barbara Ruppel of Columbus. That means we have 9 to go to reach our goal, to make this hour a success. If you're already a member of 89.7 NPR News, thanks so much for your support. But if you've been a member at $10 a month for a while, just want to remind you that this is a great opportunity to increase that sustaining membership by $5 a month to $15 a month. Your added support goes a long way toward keeping this station strong. And then you can also get that thank you gift to attend our virtual event on October 15th with Connie Schultz, my guest this hour, and also get the autographed book of The Daughters of Erietown to go along with it. So consider increasing your sustaining membership to $15 a day. Just 9 to go and just about 4 minutes left in the hour. I know we can do it. Thanks so much for your support. With your gift, you not only get to attend a great event, but you'll also be a member of 89.7 NPR News. And it's just like with exercise, you know, you feel those endorphins. I feel like there's a sort of an endorphin associated with supporting your local public media, your 89.7 NPR News, your public radio station. You just feel good about it. So you show support, you're supporting us, you're helping us do our jobs, and you're going to feel better for it. You know, as a regular listener of All Sides with Ann Fisher, you know that we work hard to bring you all kinds of topics day after day, week after week. We do it. We work hard at it. It's the joy of our lives to do it. But we need your help to keep doing it. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Connie Schultz, I can't wait to talk with you again on October 15th. Thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, I love talking to you, Ann. You know that. And I love your listeners. We hear from them all the time. So I look forward to October.
You bet. Connie Schultz, Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, nationally syndicated columnist and author. Her first novel is The Daughters of Erietown. And she has also going to join us on October 15th for a conversation to benefit 89.7 NPR News. Now we're asking you to join the station to maybe increase your monthly membership so that you can join us in the conversation with Connie Schultz on October 15th. Thanks to Susan Johnson in Westerville. That means we have 8 more pledges to go before the end of the hour. 866-897-9678 or go online to WOSU.org. Remember, this is our fall membership drive, and your support pays for the programs you listen to every day. Bonnie Millenthal from Columbus. Bonnie, thank you so much for your support. Really appreciate it. Thanks to you, we can bring you the programs that we do every day. We can bring you the variety. We can bring you the depth of conversation that you've come to depend on. We have 7 more to go before the end of the hour. 866-897-9678. Thanks to Kelly Dawson of Columbus. That means just 6 more to go. I know we can do it. 866-897-9678. Join the club, I guess, is what I like to say. You can go to WOSU.org as well. You're listening to listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus and online at WOSU.org. It's a service of WOSU Public Media. 89.7 NPR News. We are global. We are local. Thanks to Georgia and David Roebuck of Lancaster. That means just 5 more to go and just about a minute and a half to get there. 866-897-9678 is the number to call. Remember, at the $15 a month sustainer level, you can get a ticket to the October 15th event with Pulitzer Prize winning journalist Connie Schultz. She's a nationally syndicated columnist and author of a new book. It's titled The Daughters of Erietown. Join us for that conversation. And if you're already a member of 89.7 NPR News, then thank you. But if you've been a member at $10 a month, maybe $5 a month, maybe $7 a month, whatever it is, this is a great opportunity to increase that sustaining membership to $15 a month. Your added support will go a long way toward keeping the station strong, and you can also get the thank you gift to attend our virtual event on October 15th with Connie Schultz. Thanks to Jacqueline Bird from Columbus, just four to go before the end of the hour. You can also, you can, consider increasing your sustaining membership to $15 a day. I'm sorry, $15 a month. Don't everybody drop dead there. $15 a month at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Thanks to everybody for listening today. Thanks for your support. It means the world to us here at 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Have a great day.